Hi, this is Danielle from The Jealous Curator, and this is episode 66 of Art for Your Ear. This episode is supported by Saatchi Art, the world's largest curated online gallery offering original art by independent artists from around the world. Visit them at saatchiart.com. I've also been mentioning audible.com the last few weeks because they have not only made my new book into an audiobook, but they also gave me my own link so that I can offer all of you a free book along with a 30-day trial. Pop over to audibletrial.com/jealouscurator to pick up whichever book you like. Okay, so today I am chatting with Australian artist Sandra Atterovich. She is a self-taught artist who paints quirky people and other things on pieces of wood. And yes, I love all of them so, so much. They're kind of folksy, but modern and always hilarious. Anyway, I've written about her a few times over the years, but today we're actually going to talk. Here we go, calling Melbourne. Hi, Sandra.
Hello, Danielle. How are you?
Good. I'm so glad that we were able to finally get technology on our side, and it's all happening now.
Me too. I can barely believe that it's happening.
I know, me too. And like, it's just so, it's also opposite. I'm heading into fall, you're heading into spring. Like, it's a miracle we made this happen.
It is, and I can see a lovely garden of blossoms and beautiful things outside, which is reminding me, and I feel very lucky. It's been a long, hard winter here, but nothing compared to Canada, I'm sure.
Oh, I know. We're always so happy to see blossoms here, but yeah, now it's our summer is ending, and my son's about to go back to school, and I'm like, How is it August 31st? No. Anyway, it is, so I'll deal with it. Anyway, I am so excited to talk to you, because I wrote about you quite a long time ago, and
Thank you.
Oh, no problem. I love your work. It's so funny and kind of folky, but modern and hilarious and cool. And so I did a teeny tiny bit of research on you, but not much, because I like to be surprised. So I don't want to know everything going in. So I want to hear your story about, you know, when you started making things and, you know, were you an artsy kid and did you come from an artsy family? Or did that kick in later for you?
It's probably come and gone in dribs and drabs. When I was a really small child, I was quite sickly, nothing serious, but I often had a cold or a stomach ache, or maybe I just liked being at home with my mum. And I'd watch TV and draw quite a lot. But funnily enough, I still can't catch a ball or ride a bike very well because I mustn't have spent much time outside. But then I thought that I should be serious when I went to school, so I ended up studying art history rather than studying a creative course, because in Australia they tend to be divided up straight away. You can't really play and do different things. You have to decide whether to be a textile designer or a ceramicist or whatever. You can't do everything, so I decided to do nothing. And then I got a job working as a designer, t-shirt prints and fabrics and that kind of thing, which was a sort of a serious job. And then only 5 or 6 years ago, I decided to be brave and go out on my own, which financially hasn't been a great decision, but other than that.
Well, how did you, so, okay, hold on. Let's reverse here.
I
love art history too. I minored in it because the program I did, you were allowed to do studio arts, but then you could minor in art history. So that's what I did. And I loved it. But so when you were in art history, were you like still drawing and stuff at home?
Yes, I was for a while, but I think that one of the really good things about art history is that it teaches you to be a critic, but that's also a bad thing because I've always been very hard on myself, and I think that that actually gave me really nice big words and big reasons to be hard on myself. So after a while, I actually stopped and I didn't do anything for 10 years, anything of my own work. When I became a designer, I would just design on the computer all day and didn't draw or anything like that for a very long time, which is quite sad. Really? Mm-hmm.
I have that same story. I was a designer for 10 years and didn't make really any art.
Wow. I know, it's quite sad, isn't it? And presumably you were at the computer all day as well.
And I've said to people before, you know, that are designers by day, is that you come home and you have been creative all day. You're not being creative for yourself, but you've been creative all day, and you come home and you kind of just want to like eat junk food and watch TV.
Exactly.
It's really hard to be like, okay, get out the canvases. It's just, I always felt very creatively tapped.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly how I feel, because even though you're not being really, really creative when you're being a designer, it still must be working the same part of the brain.
Mm-hmm. And you just feel a bit fatigued. Well, how did you go from graduating in art history to designing stuff?
Here in Australia, we have bridging courses, for want of a better term, called TAFEs, Technical and Advanced Something Education. I can't think of what the acronym is at the moment. So for 2 years, I did a mixed course where you could experiment and do all sorts of things. And one of the things I did was illustration. And the first job that I got was drawing cartoon characters for a boxer short brand called Davenport, which at the time had, you know, lewd Mickey Mouse, you know, suggestive, horrible boxer shorts with suggestively used Warner Brothers and Disney characters. It was all very strange.
Oh my God. Perfect with an art history background.
Yeah, very sophisticated. Yeah. I'm sure that all my teachers would have been very proud of me. In fact, I think I avoided them if I saw them in the street quite a long time.
So what are you up to these days? I got to get going. So did you stay there for a long time doing various things, like lewd underwear, or where did you go from
yeah,
there?
For 5 years, yes.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. And so as you were doing that, were you, your style must have been developing in that time.
I did learn how to use a computer at that time, and I learned how to make a repeat print. I learned what fabric design was. So I was actually quite lucky because all of the stuff that I would have done if I was studying textile design or cartooning, I actually got to do at work and I was paid to do it, which was really good.
Yeah, that is a great way to get educated and get paid at the same time.
Between tears from horrible bosses and...
Yeah. Oh, I've been there too. And so how did you... because your pieces now are far from digital.
Yeah, that was a conscious decision that I made because everybody else seemed to have been doing such beautiful digital work that I decided that in order to stand out, I would actually do non-digital work, which sometimes I think wasn't a great decision because it's hard to make changes when someone asks you to do an illustration. But I try and get around that by showing what I'm working on to the client more frequently than someone who's done the work on the computer, maybe. Mm-hmm.
And so how did you make that jump? Did you start doing illustration jobs sort of on the side while you were designing, or how did you do that little jump?
I should say. Yeah. I live in, and I decided that in order to make some extra money, I would let out the front room, which is where I used to kind of play and make things. And around the same time, I made a new friend who was studying art at another little bridging course, and I decided to do a course there, which was more of an art course rather than an illustration course. And it's all a bit murky now because I'm not sure what order things happened in. But I got a studio, and I started actually. I got a Blogspot blog, and I felt really frightened. I thought, oh, now I have to actually do stuff and put that stuff on the blog, and people are going to see it. People all around the world can see what I'm doing, so I'd better do good things. And so I sat in this studio and thought, oh, I'd better be an artist now. It was all very intimidating at first.
What year was this? How long ago was this?
2008, I think, 2009. Okay. Yeah. So I kind of felt as though I should be making stuff because I had this blog. And so I just started playing. And also I was paying for a studio.
Yeah, that's a motivator.
Yes.
And so how did you, because I love, all of your stuff is so great and the pieces on paper are fantastic, but how did you start, so you're art history, then you're on a computer designing underpants, and then you start painting on wooden shapes.
I can't really pinpoint what it was. I started making doing paper objects and then cutting them out and collaging them, and I was making these sort of weird anthropomorphic beings, but because they were on paper they couldn't really stand or do anything. When I thought, I want to do something on wood so that I can cut these things out and make them real rather than them just being pictures of things, I thought if I made them out of wood and cut them out that they would almost become real. And not that I actually really think that, but I guess it's kind of a way of doing something that's between painting and sculpture, and you can do things with it, put them on bookshelves or arrange them and do something a bit different than just putting art on a wall. And I'm also very influenced by a Swedish pop artist from the 1960s called Öyvind Fallström. I don't know how to pronounce his name properly, and apologies to my Swedish friend. He made magnificent cutout scenes and installations in the 1960s, and they often had a political bent. And I saw those in Paris and Stockholm and thought they were wonderful. I thought they were made of wood, but they're actually made of metal, but painted metal. And that's always stuck in my mind as something that is more exciting than just painting for some reason.
And so did you start, because you also have pieces where you've painted on found objects, like your ping pong paddles and stuff like that. So did you start it on like a found piece of wood, or did you start by cutting things out, like cutting out your wood yourself?
Yeah, I started cutting out the wood myself, and my father very sweetly gave me a fantastic big scroll saw, which I use now and have been using for about 5 or 6 years, which means that I can make quite a lot of work and play with the scale and do all sorts of things. But I did start cutting them out by hand, which was really hard.
Yeah. Did you ever get injured?
Yeah, I still do, actually.
Well, I would be terrified.
Oh, it is terrifying. I have to pretend that it's a sewing machine because it kind of looks like a giant sewing machine.
Yeah. I could see that. I remember in grade eight metalwork, because they made us take all of the, you know, and so I was in metalwork and I remember them saying, we're using the lathe, and they said, you know, you can't get too close to it if you're wearing baggy clothes because, it, you know, if you get hooked on the thing, it'll pull you in. Well, I hope my dad's not listening to this. I had taken one of my dad's big sweaters, because this is the 80s and giant sweaters were cool. And I had asked to borrow it, and he said no. So I waited till he went to work and took it. And then there I was in metalwork class with my friend Melanie Germain, and we're goofing around and not really paying attention. And I got hooked in it.
Oh.
And it pulled me right up to my neck, like I was about to die.
Oh, what?
In the metalwork lathe. And then Melanie Germain hit the emergency stop button, and they had to wheel me out of it. And my dad's sweater was just like,
oh.
Yeah. So anytime I'm near some sort of power tool, I'm just like, oh my God. I get like, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder flashbacks. It's like, oh. So I was looking at your stuff, and I thought, I wonder if she gets someone to cut those pieces for her, or if she's got a saw in her studio and she's cutting stuff out. You're cutting stuff out.
People do often ask me that, or whether I use a laser cutter, which I think kind of burns things, doesn't it, when it's cutting.
Yeah.
But Danielle, I'm so glad. I assume you have both of your arms still and your nose and everything else.
Yeah, and I even went into the Home X studio, got the oil out, stitched up the sweater because it was a fuzzy wool sweater, so you could stitch it, and my dad still doesn't know. I put it back in the drawer.
Oh, you're joking.
No, that so that's why I'm hoping he's not listening, because I don't think he knows this story.
Oh, that's very funny. I misheard you. I thought that you were hoping that your son wasn't listening, which is probably just as bad. But
yeah. No,
he
doesn't
get ideas.
Know.
But oh gosh, that's a great story. I need to know where the emergency button is at all times.
Yeah.
In the future.
Yeah.
We all do. Anyone who's listening needs to know where that emergency button is, or have a lovely friend who can press it.
Yes, and have 911 on speed dial. Well, that makes me love your work even more, that you're doing all that yourself. And so what do you sketch it all out first, and like you've got your plan going in, or do you let the scale, like do you play around with the scale once you've got the wood, or how does that work?
I do often sketch things out, and then I will scan them, and if I'm not that happy with parts of the sketch, I can play around with it in Photoshop and scale it up or down, which is really, so I'm not entirely computer free.
Why be that? Like, you've got that skill.
Exactly.
Kind of cool, actually, because they do, you know, they end up very handmade, but why not use the computer to help you along the way?
Exactly, yes, yeah. And I think that they do look a lot better, and it's good to have the sketches on the computer, because then I can combine things and, I guess use a sketch more than once, which sounds a bit lazy, but we all have our little signature things that we like to do,
yeah.
I guess.
Why not?
Yeah, exactly.
And so when you do, how did you start painting on stuff, like those Russian dolls or the ping pong battles?
Well, the ping pong bats were actually a present from a friend who barely knew me at the time. She just sent them to me, which was really lovely. She just sent me a note saying, oh, I think you'll like these. And they've become a bit of a sensation. It's really interesting. I can paint a bunch of flowers on a piece of wood or a piece of paper, and they'll sit in my Etsy shop for a year. But if I paint the same flowers on a bat, I guarantee you they'll be gone within a week. It's really, I don't know why people like them so much, but they're fun to paint on. They're really fun.
Yeah, I bet. And so do you, I guess you can paint over if it doesn't go the way you want it to.
Yes, and I can even sandpaper bits of it that I don't like back, or even if I wanted to, I could do effects based on what the sandpaper's doing. I don't do that very often, but it's quite lovely. I can make it smooth, and it adds another dimension to it, adds a warmth. And sometimes I think that my love of wood comes from the fact that I'm the daughter of a stonemason. So I grew up in a house with lots of cold stone in it, and the warmth of the wood for me is quite exotic.
That's interesting.
Mm.
And it is. It's like a lot of the found stuff is quite that honey kind of warm wood.
Yeah, and the found stuff can be lovely too, because it'll have little strange little bits to it that the normal plywood won't have.
Okay, this got a little out of control technology-wise. We tried about 5 times to keep this conversation going, but between Sandra sounding like a robot from a 1970s movie and my calls just dropping off completely, we decided to take a 3-hour break. With the time difference, I went and had dinner. She had lunch the next day. We are now crossing our fingers and hoping Australia's Wi-Fi allows this to happen. Ready? Calling Melbourne again.
Hello, Danielle.
Hello. Okay. This is happening.
Yes, we're very serious about it now, aren't we?
Yes.
You're well-fed and I am well-fed too. I've just had lunch, so hopefully you had a nice dinner.
I did. There we go. But maybe that's all we needed. The internet needed a little food break, as did we. We're just going to go.
Yes.
Okay, so when last we left off, we were talking about paint for folk artists.
Yes.
That's where we left off. And you were saying... We were talking about wood. I hope that I'm remembering this correctly. So we were talking about wood, and then you said that you can use this paint to paint on glass and or mirrors and or textiles.
Yes, as long as you use a particular medium that's suited to either of those materials and probably other things as well. I'm starting to sound like I'm advertising for paints.
Maybe they'll slide you a deal on your next order. you know what I was realizing? So while I was having my dinner, I was like, oh, you know what I forgot to ask going back was when we were talking about, you know, you making your jump to go and do your own thing and not be designing anymore. Mm-hmm. So at that time, and, you know, we were both saying that we were both, you know, as designers, you get sort of creatively wiped. What was it that you were making? Was it pieces on wood that got you really excited to make you think, like, I'm going to jump?
I think it was because I did that short art course that a friend of mine had encouraged me to do, and I think I'd already had an exhibition somewhere, and so I was and I had my studio by then, and I was only going into the studio maybe once a week or once every 2 weeks, and I think I'd been featured on the Design Files blog, which is a very well read blog in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And it got such good feedback that I decided to be really brave and leave, which seems so silly now. I can't believe I did that.
I'm so glad you did. That's so fantastic.
Thank you, Danielle. The jury is out on that one. If you saw my bank account, you wouldn't be so enthused.
Well, what did you, and I think we were trying to talk about this, but the interweb wasn't letting us. So when that was all happening, did you have, you know, people talk about the imposter syndrome if they're self-taught, or, you know, did you have any of that?
Yes, definitely. Particularly when I first moved into the studio, it's an open plan space and you can kind of see into other people's spaces. And I thought that I would be sitting there doing the most terrible work compared to everybody else, which is, you know, about 100 people in here, because I'm at the studio now. And I was quite wrong about that. I realized that there were people there who were at very different levels of skill. Some people are just Sunday painters. Other people are incredibly professional and do all sorts of stuff. So it was a really terrible attitude that I had. I'm very, very hard on myself sometimes.
Yeah. And so in the studio, do you guys share work with each other Or is everybody sort of doing their own thing?
Everybody does their own thing, but occasionally there is the opportunity to collaborate. Or, for example, if I've done some artwork, there's a couple of photographers here who can take photos of the artwork. Or the thing that we mainly do is we talk about, when it comes to illustration, we might talk about pricing. Or you just talk about what, you know, the sorts of daily things that come up.
Yeah. Do you use each other for that? Like if you're like, oh, this isn't working, like, do you bounce stuff off of people?
Definitely, yeah. And just even things like, oh, there's a really great show at so-and-so gallery, or that's not worth looking at, or
yeah. That's so nice to have, you know, because you can feel so alone as an artist. And I think as soon as you're in a studio like that, it suddenly opens you up to like all these different things that you wouldn't have known of either, you know, like even different mediums, or like you said, like going to different shows and meeting, you know, people that you might not cross paths with normally.
Yeah, exactly. And I think because I've been a part of it for so long, I take things for granted. I think it's been about 8 years now, but I think that if I'd been at home, I would have been terribly lonely and just, you know, dying to talk to someone, anyone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the great thing about the blogosphere. That's what I really found, you know, when I started Jell's Curator, was that I felt very alone. And then all of a sudden there was all of these people putting up their hand and saying, me too, me too. Mm. And I was like, oh, and it was kind of like an online studio in a way, you know, like, yeah. I mean, not as much because you can't really share your art as easily, but it was just so nice to have conversations with other people who got it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And the person might be on the other side of the world, which is kind of really fun. And not just someone who's, from the suburb next to yours.
But still, I mean, either way, that's such an important thing, is to share your work and to talk about all this stuff and not be in a vacuum. That's
exactly.
The worst place to be. So you're feeling imposterish, but you're going for it anyway. Mm. And you seem to do, you were saying, and again, I don't know what we caught and what we didn't catch. I'm going to stitch this together, and I'm going to tell everybody ahead of time that we had technical difficulties, but you were saying about, you know, taking your portfolio around and showing, you know, ad agencies and whatever for illustration work, but that you haven't had to do that yet because work has come to you. So was that through Etsy, or like, how did you start promoting yourself?
I think because I was on enough social media platforms for enough people to see, you know, between the design files and having my work in Frankie magazine, and I guess I had enough blog readers, and now Instagram's been very good as well. I get work that way. I think pretty much between Frankie and the design files has been a body in Melbourne, in Victoria, where I live, called Craft Victoria, has been fantastic as well. They've been really, they've stood behind me and my work for the last 4 or 5 years, and that's really helped too.
Oh, that's so great. I think why go around with your book if you don't, you know, that's the great thing about the web, is you put that stuff out on social media and suddenly there's calls from all over the world, not just your, you know, not just the three ad agencies you can hit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what, when was the Frankie thing?
I actually did send Frankie an email back in 2010, and they did a little feature on my work, just a tiny little feature. And then all of a sudden I got an email from them asking if I'd like to have a page on their calendar. And then I did a front cover last year, which was incredible. And then this year I have a page on the calendar as well.
Wow.
For next year, which is just wonderful, because magazines that use a lot of illustration are quite rare, and it's wonderful that Frankie supports my work.
Mm-hmm. They're a beautiful magazine. You know, it's so funny, I should look up the year, because they wrote a tiny little thing about me.
They should write a big thing about you.
They wrote it. Yes, they should. Frankie, are you listening? They did a little thing about me right when the blog first started. So 2009, late 2009, I think, in the beginning, you know, in the front where it's like the little Frank bits.
Yes.
And they did like a little thing about the blog. And that was huge. Like all of a sudden my numbers from Australia went through the roof. Mm-hmm. And everyone thought I was Australian for a long time.
Yeah, that's because you're cool.
Yeah, that's right. And I used to spell everything the Canadian / Australia. I would use U's for color and blah, blah, blah. I've since dropped that because my autocorrect takes them out anyway. So I'm like, oh, forget, I can't, I can't. But yeah, that was so funny. And Frankie, they're so, supportive and amazing for artists. So that's really cool. It would be so, wouldn't it be weird if we were in the same issue?
Yeah, I'd love that.
I gotta go look. I've got it somewhere. I gotta go dig it up. So let's talk about the prize. What's it called?
It's called the McGivern Prize. And to tell you the truth, I hadn't heard of the prize until I entered it. But what I have done lately is I look up artists whose work I really like, but who are not, you know, too, too famous. And I look at prizes that they've entered, and then I enter those prizes as well. So it's actually, it's a good little prize. And I think the first prize is $25,000. So it's quite a well-respected and well-funded prize.
Yeah. And so when do you find out about that?
On the 16th.
Of September?
Yes.
Ooh.
Yeah. It's going to be a really fantastic night because there's so much good art in there, and it's art that uses text. So there's a lot of humor and a lot of, but a lot of really serious political work as well, and a lot of Indigenous art, and a lot of different takes on the theme of text in art.
What's the piece that you have in there?
I have a piece with 16, it sort of looks like a school photo, but there are 16 people. It's kind of like a portrait.
Yep.
Yeah.
I know it.
And they've all got strange things written on their T-shirts.
Yes.
Yeah.
I love your T-shirt pieces. The last post I wrote about you had the girl with the pizza shirt.
Yes. Yeah.
Save, what is it?
Save the planet. Save Earth is the only planet with pizza. I didn't actually make that up. I found that on something and thought that is just such. That's just such a youth thing to say or to think. It's quite strange.
I love it, and I think I used it on Instagram to promote that post, and people went crazy.
Oh, good.
Yeah, there you go. So I think you've got something with your crazy T-shirts there.
Yeah.
And so is that piece on paper?
No, that was a wooden figure actually.
Oh, sorry, not her. Sorry, I was in my own little brain. The piece for the prize.
The piece for the prize is on wood as usual, but it's actually much larger than I would normally work to. I'm trying to make work that's a bit bigger at the moment. So I think it's 90 centimetres wide. I'm sorry, I don't have inches in my head. So it's quite, for me, it's quite big.
How come you're wanting to work bigger? Just to see if you can?
Yes,
yeah,
exactly. Yeah, I've been told to work bigger by lots of people, and I thought, oh, okay, I'll give it a shot.
And what do you think?
I like it. I could have done it even bigger, I think.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
You're going to have to get more studio space.
I will. And I'll have to get frames that are going to be more expensive too, and lots of repercussions from working bigger.
Yes. I remember in university, I used to paint really big in university, 6 foot by 6 foot kind of things.
Wow.
And I lived in residence, and the art building was on it was the University of Victoria in Canada. And there was they called it the Ring Road, and it was a circular road that went all around campus. Well, I was on completely the opposite side of the circle from the art building, and I would walk every morning. Well, I remember one time carrying this 6 foot. It was like a sail. I was like flying through the. I could not hold it, and the bus that goes around, the city bus that went around, the guy felt so bad. He just stopped and said, "Do you want to get on?" I was like, "I have no money," and he's like, "That's okay. You're gonna blow away." And so I haven't really worked huge since university, but it's tempting, that's for sure.
Oh yeah, do it.
Yeah.
And it means that you have to kind of, the level of detail shifts, and you have to make big brush strokes or big, you know, when you're cutting out paper, you know, just think differently. And that can be quite an interesting learning experience just to change scale.
Yeah.
I think.
And then I bet it would feel interesting going back to small too. Like, you know, if you're sort of fluctuating between the two, it would be cool. It'd be an interesting little experiment.
I think so too, and you'd have to keep your design hat on too, because you would be able to see what works and what doesn't quite quickly.
Right. Big canvases scare me. I call them BWCs, big white canvas.
Oh, me too. Absolutely. And that's partly why I work on wood too, is because I find canvas in general very scary.
Yeah. What is the deal? Like, why is it so scary? Maybe with wood because you can sand off, or I don't know. You know what? I just interviewed somebody though who sands canvas.
Oh, okay. Yes, I've heard people do that, but because I'm scared of canvas, I'd be too scared to sand it, of course.
Sure.
It's
Well,
just really scary.
I had a really cheap one, just like from the dollar store or whatever, that I'd bought for my son. And so I thought, well, and after I did that interview, I took it, and because I hate the little bumps on canvas.
Yeah, me too.
And so I went and sanded it. It was amazing. It all came right off, and then it was super smooth, and it was a much nicer
Ah.
experience. So, FYI.
Yeah, that I'm going to remember that. Thank you, because
Yes,
I
well,
hate those little bumps too.
yeah, I really hate them. And it totally, they were gone in like a second. So, something for all of us to think about. Those people who hate big white canvases, sand them. Maybe it'll make it easier for you.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so
I
you have to, sorry.
No, that's fine.
I was going to say, you have to tell me about, you have to keep me up to date after September 16th.
Okay. Yes. I'm just feeling very lucky to be part of such a great
Yeah,
show,
it's an
and
honor being nominated.
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's huge.
Yeah, it
Yeah,
is.
for
That's
me.
very exciting.
For
Have a,
me.
are you going to it?
Oh yes, my
Yeah.
entire family and friends and everybody else I can muster is going. Yes. There's a
That's awesome.
People's Choice Award, so I think if I have enough of my family with me, they can all vote for me.
I love it. Okay, well, every and is this in, I have to say Melbourne, right? I can't say Melbourne.
You can say Melbourne.
Melbourne. Melbourne. Is that where it is? Yeah. Okay, so everybody that, I guess I have a lot of listeners there actually. So everybody go and People's Choice.
Yeah.
There,
Oh, well, if
done.
one of your friends is there, you're allowed to choose them instead. It's okay.
And
Or both.
I kind of want to know, like, you've got lots of stuff going on. What is next for you, or what do you want to be next for you?
It's funny because during our little break when we were I was looking at the work of Martha Rich, who's done the book cover for your
Yeah.
fantastic book, which I can't wait to get. Sounds really good, and I love that cover.
Me
So I was looking
too.
at her work, and I was thinking, oh, I love that she's done little soaps, and she's done all sorts of things. I like the idea of my work being on all sorts of in all sorts of contexts, and yeah, so I hope to get all sorts of work, but I really enjoy the art angle as well, and I find that very challenging. Yeah, so the idea of doing more work for exhibitions is
Yeah.
really appealing.
Yeah, I mean, I can, I obviously works in both, and Martha's really good that way too. She shows all the time, but then she's, I mean, you guys are very similar in a way. Like, you have a very similar sort of sense of humor and
Thank you.
yeah, quirky and fun, and she uses lots of weird text too, and she's done really well with, yeah, like the soaps and socks and t-shirts. She just has fun with it. You know?
I love it. I think it's great work.
Yeah, like I've been talking about selling my collages, and I've been all like in my
Yay.
head about it and everything. And Martha's just like, just have fun. She's like, art is meant to be shared. Like, don't hoard it, and don't, price it so high that people can't have it. Like,
Yeah.
she's like, art should be, people should have it in their homes. And I just
Yes.
love that approach. And, the fact that she doesn't get super precious about, I mean, I'm sure she makes executive decisions on what that art goes on. I'm totally speaking for her right now. This is just my guess. But, she also just seems to really have fun. If it's a project that she's into, she's like, yeah, let's do that. So.
Yeah, that takes it takes a level of confidence, and I'd like to think I'll get there one day, but that's always been a bit of an issue for me, confidence.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm
Welcome to the
just
club.
well, I'm glad I mean, I'm not glad I'm not the only one, but in a
Yeah.
way, it kind of does make it easier, doesn't it, to not think that you're some strange alien and that
Yeah.
everybody else out there is so tough and strong and gets everything they want and all that sort of stuff.
Which part aren't you confident about?
Oh, that's a really good
Because your
question.
work is fantastic, and you have
Oh,
to feel
thank
good
you.
about that.
Oh, thank you. Well, when this podcast's out, I'll just keep
Yeah.
rewinding what you've said and playing it over and over again. Thank you. But there's always this fear of, oh, maybe I've run out of ideas. Maybe I've done my best work already and I'm just repeating myself. It's just, yeah, it's relentless. I'm really into music, and I like to, I like reading about the things that musicians go through. So, it's that the difficult second album. And have you heard that term
Yeah.
before? Yeah. I think that applies to visual artists as well, doesn't
Yeah.
it?
Have you heard that? I've mentioned this on so many episodes, but have you ever watched that Elizabeth Gilbert TED Talk about the muse?
No, but I've been told about that before. Yes.
Watch it. It's so good. But there's a part in it where she's talking about Eat, Pray, Love. Is that what it is? I always get the order mixed. Yes, Eat, Pray, Love. And she said, you know, I have to sometimes, like, I have to be okay with the fact that probably the biggest success of my life is behind me.
Yes.
You know, and she said, I will write other books. I will, you know, have successes. But, like, is Julia Roberts going to play me again? You know? And so she's like, she said, I had to reconcile that in my head and be okay with it, but still continue making.
Mm. But I expect, too, that it's kind of freed her up to do. Yeah, but does it free you up if you've had a crazy success like that, which probably made her a huge amount of money as well?
Right. But it's probably, like, from our perspective, it's probably like, oh, that's freed her up to do whatever she likes. But who knows? Like, maybe in her mind, she's like, oh, geez.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It would be a weird thing.
Mm.
I was a little bit scared. Like, creative, when my first book came out, it wasn't really, I don't know. I mean, it could have done nothing, but it did really well, and that was just exciting, and I was happy and good enough, you know. And then with this new book coming out, all of a sudden I'm like, oh, geez. You know, like, what if it isn't a happy, you know, not that creative block was a happy accident. It's filled with great stuff, but you know what I mean? This is like, oh, God, what if? So I'm a bit nervous. So I'm going to rewind that part when you said you're excited to get my new book.
Oh, yeah.
I'll just keep rewinding that part of the podcast and listening.
Well, I tried to order it already, and I'm not really sure what happened, but I'll just order it when it comes out. So it's October the 25th or the 15th or
It's
something.
October 11th, but that's in North America. Sometimes Australia is a little bit different. And then October 25th is the audio version.
And so have you done the reading for
Yes.
that? What was that like, reading an entire book that you've written?
Oh, my throat was really sore.
Yeah.
It was really neat, though. Like, I was so happy that they, wanted to do it, that Audible wanted it, and that, because very often for first-time authors with them, they'll just use voice talent, but they let me do it. Mm. And so I went to a studio in Vancouver, and they told me to bring lip balm and tea, and within 2 hours, my throat was already sore. Oh, and it was right before lunchtime, and my tummy kept grumbling. And the mics are so good that he's like, he had to keep cutting because he's like, I just heard your stomach again. I was so embarrassed.
What happened to me.
Yeah, I know. I'm surprised it didn't happen to both of us right before our dinner / lunch technology break. But yeah, it was so embarrassing. Anyway, it was very cool. And I haven't heard the playback or anything. So I will hear it when it comes out.
I love books that are read out by their authors.
Me too.
I don't like listening to books that are not read by their authors. So I think it's going to be fantastic. The only thing is that then we won't have the illustrations by Martha Rich, will we?
I know. That's why you have to get
both. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
I can just read you to sleep every night. You can flip through the book, read along, look at the pictures, and I'll just read to you in my Canadian accent.
Yeah, your lovely Canadian accent. And it'll be all about being positive and being okay with everything.
That's right. I'll send you off to dreamland thinking about telling your inner critic where to go.
Exactly. Well, my inner critic is extremely large. It's obese.
Yes, I know. You know, it's so funny. I just, I'm doing a talk soon. And so I put out on Instagram and Facebook, tell me the meanest thing that your inner critic tells you, because I want to include it in this talk, and I was going to include mine, and then I thought, well, I wonder what everybody else's says. I think I got over 400 comments, and it was shocking. Like, they first started rolling in, and it's just heartbreaking, right? But then they start to repeat and repeat and repeat, and it's like there's really only 5 things that everybody's inner critic seems to say. You know, and
really?
It's like,
can you tell me one?
Well, there's some that are like, you're too old, you've wasted too much time, you know, you missed your chance. There's some that, you know, are about like, oh, you're self-taught, who are you kidding? They're really mean. But they're so similar over and over and over. And at first people were like, oh my God, this is the most depressing feed ever. And then by the end, people were like, oh, this is actually quite nice, because it almost becomes comical by the end.
Yeah.
Because
isn't
it's
that brilliant?
Yeah. Which it was totally an accident. And I was like, well, there's the subject for my talk. Thank you, everybody.
Exactly. there's an artwork in that too. You could have an entire wall filled with those comments that start to repeat themselves.
Yeah.
With different names and addresses underneath, so you know that they're from different people.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be amazing. Mm. And then the other cool thing was that most of them were women.
Mm.
And so a few people commented and said, is this because only women have inner critics, or is it because, you know, are men just have, do they have more bravado? And I was like, no, I've talked to so many men who say all the exact same things. I think they just don't share as much on social media.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Men are just not sharing it, maybe because they feel a sense of shame, or because they're not on social media in the way that we seem to be sharing.
Maybe.
Sharing. Yeah.
But every time I go and talk somewhere, I always end up having these really cool, you know, sidebar conversations afterwards, and it's equal amounts of men and women, and they all say exactly the same thing, which in a way, like you said, like, I don't want anybody to feel bad. But at the same time, it's very comforting to know that we all kind of feel the same, regardless of success level or, you know, whatever. Everybody has that really mean voice. And what I find interesting is the people who figured out how to, well, I mean, obviously you still keep making.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's what's so interesting to me, is when they can start to use that voice as a guide, you know, and if it pipes up, well, maybe you're not quite on the right track, but you can say, okay, thanks so much. Sit back down. I'm going to keep going. And, you know.
Yeah. Because I don't think you can ever get rid of it, but maybe it can become a little bit quieter, or you can just work through it.
Well, a few people said that and I'd heard this before too, to give it a name. This one woman said that she calls hers Gary. Which is so funny, just to be like, Gary, shut up. And as soon as it's like some, you know, like Tim, you know, like, how threatening can that be? I just thought that was so, so funny. So maybe we should all just name ours.
Yeah, and it's good, because then you separate it from yourself. Then it becomes something that you can define, and it's not just everything that you're saying to yourself, but it's one particular style of thing that you say. And maybe when you're being kind to yourself, maybe
that should be somebody else.
Yeah, or maybe that shouldn't have a name, because that's actually you talking to yourself.
Ooh, I like that.
This
is getting very deep.
I know, but I think it's very necessary too, because it's a really important topic.
It is. I know, and I find too that, and I've said this so many times too, that it's so narcissistic, but for literally years, those 10 years that I was designing and not really making art, I thought I was the only one that heard that voice. I didn't know it was a thing, you know, and I just thought it was me. And I never talked about it.
Yeah.
You know, I was so embarrassed. And then you start talking to people and it's like, what? You know, when I started Jealous Curator, I mean, I started it for myself. I didn't expect those Me Too stories to start rolling in. And then when they did and people started talking about this, I was like, oh, wait, what? You have that too. And it was such a relief to go, oh, I'm part of a club, you know, and then it's kind of okay. And when you have those days in the studio, when that voice is really loud, you have to know that all of these amazing, talented, successful artists have those days in the studio too.
Oh yeah, definitely. And there are days in the studio when I can draw like a dream, and then other days when nothing. Why is that eye over there, or what is happening? This just looks terrible. A 5-year-old could do better. So
I know. It's funny, isn't it? Some days your head and your hands just don't want to cooperate with each other.
That's exactly what it is, isn't it? It's the head and the hands cooperating. And yes. Yeah, your story sounds really similar to mine, actually.
Really?
Oh, dear. Yes. Yeah, it's kind of sad, but you're right, though. I think as soon as you do name it and see it as just a thing, just a pattern, then it's really easy to pick up on it and just set it aside and maybe put it in a little box.
Yeah. Well, you know, at first I was like, oh, you know, it's just part of being a creative person. And then the more I've talked at different places, people that aren't like sort of in the arts are like, well, I have it too. Like, it's not an creative thing. It's a human thing.
Yeah. I've noticed that too with even academics who write, they might write books on whatever subject they're into, or yeah, you have to really just sit and just, you have to just do it, don't you?
Yeah.
That's what it is.
You just have to show up. And that's what I didn't do for a long time. And now I force myself to show up, and there's those magical days, and then there's those days when nothing happens, but I know that the magical days exist.
Yes. And the days when nothing happens, there's probably something that does happen on those days as well.
Yeah.
Maybe they just don't look like something that you could photograph and put on Instagram, but it's still something.
Those are the days you show pictures of cleaning up your studio.
Exactly. Well, you had a really nice chat with someone.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe you take a picture of your latte that day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because nothing came out. I was just saying this to somebody too on that feed on, I can't remember if it was a Facebook one or Instagram, but I said, she was talking about, you know, being afraid that like the ideas won't come. And there's a girl in Creative Block, Amanda Happe, that said, I asked her about creative blocks, and she said, well, I might have them, but she said, I've never really thought of them that way, because she said, I just find that some days or weeks or whatever, it's just best to be creatively quiet. I just assume that those are the weeks I just really have nothing creatively to say. And she said, but I lay in wait with my ears perked, ready to pounce the minute that, you know, an idea shows up. But I thought, oh, what a nice way to cut yourself some slack.
Exactly.
Because ideas aren't going to come every day. That's unrealistic to think that, right? And so instead of being like, oh, no, there's nothing, I'll never create again, just be like, oh, well, today I'm just being creatively quiet, so I'll go do something else, like, you know, admin stuff or prep stuff or cleaning stuff, because, you know, that's still valuable.
It is. That stuff's really important too, actually. Yeah. I think, listening to or reading something that Lisa Congdon had said, you know, if you're quiet, have a look and see if you've got all your paint colors, stock up on everything. And lately I've thought, gee, I really should have listened to her, because suddenly I don't have any brushes and suddenly I don't have this color. And I really don't feel like doing that now.
Yeah.
Because I really need to do my work. Yeah, all of that stuff is important. And I suppose it depends. If you're someone who really likes order and neatness and you find that important before you start working, then it's important. But some people might mess. I'm not one of those people, but yeah.
I know. I like it to be a certain way, but then I also know myself that I use that as a procrastination tool, you know? So lately I've been forcing myself to work in like half mess, you know, instead of going, well, I'd best clean up for 5 hours first before I, you know, now I'm out of time to make things. So I force myself to work, and you know, it's fine. I can work in a mess.
Yeah. Yeah. Someone I was speaking to just then called it procrastinating.
Oh,
yes.
I love that.
Yes. It's pretty good, isn't it?
That is very good.
I used to just force myself to sit down by saying, okay, just do this for 1 minute. Just for 1 minute, sit down and do what you're meant to be doing. And that's really good, because it just gives you this tiny little thing that you have to do, and then you can walk away. But you generally don't walk away after a minute. You generally do get into it and you get over whatever problem it was that you were having.
Yeah, I just heard somebody else say that. That is a very good tip. Because if you can just sit down, it always goes longer.
Yeah, especially if I'm doing illustration work and it's an editorial illustration, therefore there's a problem that has to be solved, i.e. how can I turn these words into a picture?
Yeah.
Usually that can be quite hard, but when I force myself, it usually does come out.
Mm-hmm. Where do you, like, for ideas like that, do you find that working through it is the best thing, or like, do you go for a walk, or do you just get out of there, or, you know, do ideas pop into your head when you're driving or washing dishes, or is it just being in the studio and working?
Usually it's a combination of things. Sometimes I'll look at my collections of stuff on Pinterest for ideas. Other times I will just get up and leave it and come back in a couple of hours. Yeah, it just depends on how bad it is.
Yeah. I know. I find I like to do a little lap around the thrift shop.
Ah, wow. That's great.
I don't know why. Like, it doesn't, you know, doesn't change the supplies that are in my studio. But for some reason, it just, like, I don't know, relaxes me.
Yeah, it kind of gets you out of your normal habitat, doesn't it?
Yeah, and you see weird things. And
Yeah.
Okay, are you ready for the speed round?
Okay, yes.
It's never very speedy.
Okay.
But we'll go. Okay. Tropical island or ski resort?
Tropical island. I can't ski.
Okay, fair enough. I thought maybe you'd say ski.
Yeah.
But then you'd have to just sit in the lodge and drink hot chocolate.
Gosh, I love that idea. Yeah, so it's kind of, yeah, maybe, yeah, because I just remembered how hot it is. It's just that we've just come out of winter and I've forgotten how hot tropical islands can be and I can't handle the heat very well. But I enjoy the aesthetics of, you know, Hawaiian flowers and yeah, that sort of kitsch.
Me too. Yeah. I love Hawaii.
Yeah. Sorry.
Okay. Favorite kind of pizza? Because of that pizza shirt, that's why I thought of this.
A really unhealthy one that possibly has some kind of sausage on it.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. That sounds like my husband and my son. More meat on that. Have you ever painted pizza?
No, I think that's the one fast food I haven't painted yet.
It might have to be on the list. A big wooden pizza.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That'll sell like hotcakes or pizza.
Hot pizza.
Yeah. The first person you ever slow danced with?
Oh, that would have been in grade 4, which would be at the age of about 9 or 10. We did square dancing and the teacher would always play John Denver, and it would have been either Dennis or Trifon. Trifon was a very cute Greek boy. We won a lolly for our group dancing and I felt something that day.
Oh my God, I can't believe how fast you remembered that.
I know. I love remembering that. It was really cute.
Oh, that's so cute. Oh my gosh. So funny. Okay. This is totally weird, but I really liked it. Would you rather be a unicorn or a mermaid?
Oh, a mermaid, of course.
Yes.
I really like mermaids from an aesthetic point of view, and I like being in the sea too.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever painted a mermaid?
Yeah, I think I did. It was probably when I was at work doing T-shirts. There would have been a mermaid something or other. I do remember drawing one, actually. Probably.
Don't you have a tattooed dude with
Yes, I do, yes, on a clock.
Yes, I love that. Does he have a mermaid on him?
Yeah, he does, yeah. I forgot all about those. Thank you.
Oh, I love them. Your work makes me laugh out loud. I don't know if it's supposed to, but it totally does.
Yeah, of course it is. Thank you so much, Danielle. I'm honored.
Well, I'm so excited that was my last question. I'm excited because this gives me like such a great excuse to write about you again and go and grab all the stuff that we've talked about and throw it all in there, because it's just so fun and people need to see all of it.
Thank you so much, Danielle. It's been so lovely to talk to you. And if you're ever in Melbourne, please let me know and we can hang out and I can show you. I don't think there's that much to see in Melbourne, but I think I'm actually not being very kind to my city.
I've heard it's very artsy.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
it is.
And I have been to Sydney, but I've never been to Melbourne.
Ah, okay. It lost the R.
Yeah, we have friends. I have Canadian friends that I went to high school with who now live in Brisbane. And they were just back here visiting and they were talking about Australia and they were talking about different, and I mean, they still sound Canadian, but they're like, oh yeah. And then Sydney, blah, 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 and Perth and then Melbourne. And I was like, what? And they're like, no, Australians don't like it if you say Melbourne.
And I think Australians are quite used to that. Or if you say Brisbane, that's kind of a bit strange.
Brisbane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We mispronounce each other's suburbs. You know, people who live in Brisbane mispronounce Melbourne suburbs and all sorts of things. So we're very, very, very hard on each other.
Well, it's a big place. There's got to be, you know.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Like Canada. Yeah.
Well, if I make my way there, I will absolutely call you and you can be my tour guide.
That would be fantastic. I'd love to.
Well, thank you so. And this connection was awesome. Why didn't we have this before?
Well, I am in my beloved's office, and he has a different connection. He saved me.
Oh.
He has a much better connection than I do. So, yeah, this has been really good, hasn't it? It's a shame we couldn't have this morning.
Well, that's okay. You know what? I'm going to stitch those two together with a little thing in the middle saying, sorry, everybody. We're going to try again. And, I just think I'm just so happy that I got a chance to do this and that we finally got to talk and hear your story and everything.
Thank you so much, Danielle. I really appreciate it. I love your blog, and I'm looking forward to actually listening to some of the podcasts now because I was too nervous to beforehand.
Are you going to listen to yours?
Maybe. I did go on the radio once here and I spoke in my mother tongue, and I'm never going to listen to that again. It was like ethnic radio, and I have heard that I wasn't too bad, but I think that I'm capable. I'm happy to listen to anything that I say in English.
What language was that?
Croatian.
Whoa.
It was deeply embarrassing, and I just, yeah, it was horrible. But anyway, my mother assures me that I wasn't horrible, but I'll never ever listen to it.
Do you still speak it with your parents?
Yeah, I do.
My husband's Polish, and but they came to Canada when he was about 9 or 10. Oh. And then he started learning English. So he still speaks Polish, but he said a couple of months ago, he's like, I have a feeling that I speak Polish like a 9-year-old. Because that's when he stopped speaking.
Yes.
Yeah. So he's like, oh my God, because we were talking about, wouldn't it be cool to, you know, if we went to Poland with him because he can speak the language and show us around. And he's like, oh my gosh, I think I probably sound like a 9-year-old boy.
Mm. I can completely relate to that. Yep. Yeah. Don't you worry. He's not the only, I'm sure that he's not the only one.
Is that what you felt like in that interview?
Yeah, and it was an interview about my art, but my vocabulary just wasn't happening.
Yeah.
I don't have an art vocabulary. I have a vocabulary about food and dinner and normal everyday things, but not about my work. So anyway.
Well, all English here. I'm not going to ask you to speak any other language.
Thank you. You're too kind.
Okay, well, thank you again for doing this and bearing with me through all the technical stuff. And
no, I think you were bearing with me and my technical stuff. Clearly, this was a fault at this end, and I'm really sorry about that.
Oh, my gosh, no. Let's just blame Australia.
Okay, yes.
Yeah. Thanks for nothing, Australia. Yeah. All right, well, take care, and let me know about the prize on the 16th.
You too. Thank you so much,
we'll
Danielle.
Talk to you soon.
Yes, thank you, and good luck, and I can't wait to read your book and look at the beautiful illustrations as well.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye.
Success! A full conversation uninterrupted by robot voices. That was so much fun. I really, really loved our inner critic tangent, and I hope all of you did too. My other favorite part? Dancing with Trifon. Oh, Trifon. I wonder who he's dancing with now. And I wonder if he's getting lollies for it. Thanks to Sandra for dealing with the pain of Skyping from the other side of the world. Thanks to Saatchi Art for supporting this 66th episode. And thanks to Audible for offering up a free book via audibletrial.com/jealouscurator. And of course, an episode would not be complete if I didn't say thank you for showing up and listening. There will be more art for your ear next week. See you then.